Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Stop me up.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, the Rolling Stones. Good old Stones.
You know, when you started, I thought it was something else. I don't remember what, but then I was like, oh, wait, that's not it.
Didn't get you?
Yeah.
How's it going, everybody? You are watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
Today we have a fun episode. We have a guest, a special guest. He is an awesome artist, and he's actually been a larger part of our show and games than I ever realized when I wrote up this outline, and on game nights and our preview episodes. So we're going to be doing a little bit of a profile, as well as talking about art and magic in general.
Yeah, we've never had a magic artist on before, this is a first for us.
The closest we've gotten was James Pianca, who did
flavor text
and naming cards. Yeah, but not an artist. So very exciting. I feel like the Magic Man Sam now, doing a little artist profile.
I won't be. Yeah, my art acumen is not quite as high as Sam's.
No, so. not yet.
Not yet.
But before we get into it, this show is brought to you by cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That's the affiliate link that you can use the next time you're out on the interwebs shopping for some cards or products or anything magic related.
Yeah, you're going to buy magic cards anyway. If you use that affiliate link when you do, you're supporting this show, game nights, and all of our content. Another big supporter of our show is Ultra Pro.
Ultra Pro.
Ultra Pro. Ultra Pro is awesome. We always talk about the Eclipse sleeves. I really also like their dice. They're like really hefty, heavy metal dice, or the gravity dice.
Those are sick.
Yeah, those get a lot of comments at the table. Definitely check them out by supporting their products. You are also supporting this show as well. And the final way to support the Command Zone and Game Nights is directly at patreon.com/commandzone. In fact, we call out one lucky patron every single episode.
Every episode.
This episode is dedicated to Dan Bucci. Dan, you rock.
Thank you so much, Dan. All right, let's move right on to the main topic. Today, we have on the show, please give a very warm welcome to Jesper Ising. Hey, Jesper, how's it going?
Hi, how are you doing? I'm so happy to be here.
We're very happy to have you on the show. I'm pretty excited to find out some of the process behind how magic art gets made. Also, you're a pretty big fan of Commander, as it turns out.
I'm a super fan.
How many decks
did
you say you have?
I'm down to 20 decks now.
Down to?
Yeah, I dismantled
from what?
From 25. That's not counting all the pre-constructeds, of course.
Wow, but, that's like the same amount that I have.
It's about the same I have, too. No, I'm just kidding. I have like 12, I think.
That's pretty impressive. We'll talk about your frightening commander storage techniques, you know, how you store your decks in a little while. We'll start with that.
We've got lots of other things
I've seen pictures, though, and it even makes me hurt.
Well, at least they're in sleeves now.
Oh, thank goodness there's some sleeves around it.
He's got sleeves now, everybody. Congratulations, Jesper. Way to go.
He's storing the cards like the way you did back when you first started playing Magic.
It literally reminds me of like when I was 15, how I used to store the cards.
Well, Jesper, you've been playing Magic for quite some time as well, right?
Yes. I was part of the first, competing in the first tournament in Denmark ever. And that was in 94, I think it was, yeah. And I came second.
Second? What was the standout card in 94 in Denmark?
I played the never-before-seen combo with Icy Manipulator and Royal Assassin.
Oh, nice. Tap your thing, kill it.
And after that tournament, I got the nickname that every time I played the Icy Manipulator, people were saying, oh, it's the Icing Manipulator. I thought that was pretty fun.
That is amazing.
Wow.
That's actually fantastic.
So you were playing Magic before, I'm assuming you were an artist?
Oh, yeah. No, I was an artist back then, but just not as professional. So,
Right. How old were you? I mean, were you a kid?
I was 18, 19 when I started playing.
Wow.
You've been playing a long time.
Yeah, but you've been creating art for Magic the Gathering now since Lorwyn.
Yeah.
And your cards have actually made quite the impression on Magic. I think our viewers and listeners are going to be very surprised to find out the breadth of cards that you've done. And we're going to be breaking down our interview with you into a few main segments. Starting, we're going to talk about you and your artistry and your history with Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Also, and then we're going to move on to talking about specific cards and what decks they are in of your own, because you have a stipulation about the cards that you've made, right?
Yeah, yeah. I need to have at least one in every deck. That's a rule.
Every one of your decks has to have one card that you've
at least one.
Done the art for?
Yeah,
at least.
Yeah. But it's not that difficult.
I was going to say, I would think that would be hard, but looking at the list of cards you've done, it's actually... I can at least see one card that can just go in every deck, so you can always do that.
I can always put Reliquary Tower in every one of them, right?
That's the one. That's the one I was thinking of.
And let me just say, it's been reprinted so many times that I have a bunch of them, so I'll just chuck them in every one of them. But yeah, I think that's too easy, so I find ways to put other cards in it too. So
that's great to hear. All right, and then we're going to end the interview talking about your favorite decks as well and what kind of player you would like to be at the table.
Yeah.
So let's start things off. You, Jesper, are of Danish origins, and I've heard that you're actually a huge Dungeons & Dragons fan. I'm guessing that's what got you into the fantasy universe?
Yeah, yeah. I've been into every kind of fantasy there is. The role-playing, I played a lot of role-playing games. I'm still playing role-playing games.
Nice.
I played all the board games and all that, and I read all the books. And back in the days, you know, every time there was a fantasy movie out, it was just like, woo, one of my genres is out. So I've been into that forever. But it took, of course, a lot of practice to be able to be a professional fantasy illustrator, especially... Coming from Denmark, it's a bit difficult. Let's just say when I started, there was like 5 or 6 fantasy books put out through publishers every year, like novels.
Mm-hmm.
So if I did half of all the Danish fantasy covers, that would still not be a lot to make a living. So
for me,
it was pretty adamant or necessary that I broke into the American fantasy market, and that took a long time.
Right. And so when did you first encounter Magic, and what made you realize that you wanted to paint for the game?
When I was 18, I went to the university to study Danish literature. And at that point, there was a convention, a role-playing convention that I attended, and I saw some people playing a card game. And I looked over the shoulder, and I remember I saw a Singier vampire, and I thought, that's a bad illustration. I could do a lot better.
And
then the year after, that was when I attended this tournament and played the Singier Vampire to a semifinal.
Wow. So you had a lot to thank the Singier Vampire for, both for inspiring you to make better art and for taking
you
to tournaments.
Be honest, when we started playing at that time, like you played with all your cards.
Right.
And that was before the 4-limit rule. So I played a huge deck with only one Singier Vampire, but it was in play all the time because I had 5 demonic tutors to tutor it up. And that was just, people were just like, "Ah, you're going to get the Singier Vampire again. There we go."
That's pretty awesome. So you pretty much, from the moment you saw Magic, you were thinking, how can I work on that game?
I always thought I'm going to illustrate Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
And I at some point, you just had to grade down on your dreams, I guess. So
that is the top tier fantasy world.
Yeah, isn't it?
For sure.
No, I remember ever since I became a professional fantasy artist, the Magic was the corner, the milestone, or the, what do you say?
Right, right. The milestone,
that,
yeah.
That was the most important game. And I always, thought that I could do it, but ever since I've thought I could do it, and until it actually happened, it took me 7 years to practice and submit art, and maybe it's because I was a bit unrealistic about my own skills that I thought I could do it before, but in the end it succeeded, and so who cares?
Well, that's the opening line of every success story.
Yeah, exactly.
I was a bit overconfident about my skills.
So
can you take us a little bit through the process of you're saying did you just cold submit the art, or did you have some sort of pipeline that you could go through to try and start to, get your work in front of the people at Magic?
Yeah, it's a different time now. I mean, when I started, the internet was really bad. I don't think even was any real internet when I started submitting stuff. So, because that's like 20 years ago.
So what are you doing? Submitting like photographs?
I'm sending in color photocopies of my acrylic paintings back then. But
just cold though. You don't have a contact. You're just like, I don't know, what's the Wizards of the Coast address? Send it in, or do you have...
I did that when I started, and then slowly the internet became more and more, let's just say, successful. So right. I was start. What got me into magic was after 7 years, I started writing emails with another artist called Todd Lockwood, the guy who designed most of the third edition Dungeons and Dragons. Mm. And he said, you know what, Jesper, give me your portfolio and I'll send it to my art director at Magic. And I was like, yeah, this is it. I'm in, man. This is the best.
Yeah.
And he did that and I didn't hear anything back. and that was like the seventh year where I submitted stuff. So I said, I'm just gonna drop Magic. I don't want to keep being disappointed. So I wrote a novel instead.
Wow.
And the novel was called Jarvis, the Wizard's Apprentice. And a whole year after Todd Lockwood submitted my artwork, I got an email from a guy called Jeremy Jarvis, the main art director at Magic. And I thought it was a joke because it was the same month that my novel was published in Denmark. And my novel was named Jarvis. And I got a mail from a guy called Jarvis saying, do you want your job of your dreams? And I was like, this is a joke. And I didn't answer it. Because I was like, I thought it was the guys at the studio playing a prank on me and we always played pranked at each other. So I didn't answer it until the day after when I got back in. And you know, it was before you got a lot of spam emails.
Mm-hmm,
so right. So I just the email was still on top of my message, so I was like, there's a lot of information here that is unlikely that my stupid friends would be able to make up, like a creative designer. There was a lot of titles and telephone numbers and stuff, and I was like, they don't know the area code for this stuff. It's true. So I wrote a very casual reply saying, yeah, sure, I'll work for Magic, no problem. And it turned out to be real.
Wow! Yeah, you play a little hard to get.
I think what was really great about it was that for 7 years I tried to get in, and the moment I got in was because they were putting out Lorwyn. Lorwyn was a European fairy tale inspired set, and I'm like,
European artists.
Yeah, they were looking for European artists, and I was. All my illustrations I submitted were fairy tale. I illustrated Hans Christian Andersen and stuff like that. So I was like, it was like a hand in glove combination.
Mm-hmm. That's perfect. I think that's a good lesson for anyone that's trying to pursue art or in that realm, that just because you don't hear back doesn't necessarily mean that someone like Jeremy Jarvis at Wizards may have received your art, right, and looked at it and been like, well, this is really good, but it doesn't match any of the creative that we're doing for our sets.
Yeah.
But let's put this guy on the back burner so that when it does come around, we can make sure to contact.
Yeah,
timing's exactly. Super important. Do you remember the very first piece that you worked on?
Oh, yeah. Lignify was my first painting.
And of course, if you're watching the video version of the podcast, you'll be looking at it right now.
And that is actually also a card that is in one of my commander decks.
Oh, nice.
It has to be, right?
The Doran Siege Tower deck. Aha! I create three folks, right?
Oh, that's right. That is actually really nice. It's So actually, in Lorwyn, you ended up doing a variety of creatures for your first set. You made a goblin, you made a shapeshifter, a tree folk, elves. Was it interesting having to tackle all these different kinds of mythical creatures on your first assignment instead of just sort of saying doing one piece of art?
Wizard create a style guide, right? So they send out a style guide for all the artists so that everyone do the same kind of elves and the same kind of goblins. And I was just so enormously happy when I saw the style guide. I was looking at it, and most of the elves were designed by Steve Prescott, and he was one of my favorite artists. So I was just so happy to be able to be a part of it. So I had no problem tackling anything. I was just diving into it like a crazy boy. And I was like, in heaven. And I read all the manual and spent so much time on figuring out how to do this perfectly.
Can you walk us through, like, let's just take Lignify as an example. How does that work? Like, are you given the text of the card? Are you given, I guess not all the artists probably even play Magic. We know famously, like, Therese Nielsen doesn't play Magic.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they would even send you like what the card does. Do they send some sort of general explanation? Like this card is, you know, a creature getting destroyed or something. Like, how do they explain to you sort of what they want the art to look like?
They are the best art directors to work for I've ever worked for, because they give you a location, they give you a description of the creature in form of where in the style guide you should look, and they give you a mood. They say, what kind of mood is this? Funny, serious, or evil?
Oh, wow.
And they also tell you what the important part of the picture is, if there's more characters or stuff like that. So you get all the, and this is what I love about Wizard, they give you the tools to create the illustration, and then they say, how you solve this is up to you. So they trust mm-hmm. you as an artist to come up with a better solution than they would have thought of. And sometimes it works good, other times they're like, Jesper, this is way too off, can you try something different? Or other artists will submit a couple of different takes and they will choose one.
Is it like that on a lot of the art? Is it kind of a bake-off where there's multiple people commissioned for the same?
No. But if they ask me to do an illustration and I'm in a little bit of doubt, I submit 3 or 4 different thumbnails of the same illustration.
Oh, right.
I'm like angles and different ways of showing it. And if I'm really, in doubt of it, I ask my art director, hey, what does this card do? Because they know I play the game, so they are like, oh, yes, but don't worry, this is a first strike knight creature, and you can just do this instead, right? So it helps to be able to play the game.
I bet it really helps to play, yeah.
It does sometimes. I mean, if I get a description and they specifically ask for a guy with a lance, I'm like, it's first strike, I get it. So, or they say, it shouldn't have wings. And I'm like, yeah, no, it's not flying. So it's
Jesper, not to put you on the spot, but I'm wondering if there's a card that has already been released maybe recently that you remember what the direction you were given, just so we can compare, like, you know, we can show everybody the art and have you talk about, you know, what you were told versus what it ended up looking like.
Yeah. So the Dreadmaw painting I did with the big dinosaur looking hungry at a pirate ship.
The colossal Dreadmaw?
Yeah. The description was very massive. It asked for something that was almost impossible, because it asked for a creature, a big dino that has trampled through the forest, creating a path of crushed trees. It had turned over a tree that were over a river, and he was standing on the tree looking down hungrily at a pirate ship, and the people were jumping, and he was about to eat it almost in one mouthful. So
wow, that is
that
a
was
lot.
The description that you were given.
That's a lot.
I retold in my words.
In your words, but basically,
it was way better informed and precise with reference. But the point was that when I started sketching it, I did a lot of different takes on it, different sketching, and I immediately thought, I'm going to have to narrow something down or focus in on one thing at least. And for me, that was by far, it was a creature, so I knew I needed a narrative, a personality to him. So I focused in on the face and his expression when he looks at the ship.
Yeah.
And then
I really, more or less,
tried to ignore the fact that he had trampled through the forest. But on the other hand, since I was playing a magic, I was like, why is he trampling through the forest, crushing the trees? Maybe you need to sacrifice a forest to make him able to do something weird with damage. And I was like, I'm not showing that. This is horrible. And the art director was saying, yeah, this looks good. Yeah, yes. So I was super happy that I gave him this option. This was 1 out of 4 options. So
that's funny that knowing magic so well can actually get in your way sometimes. Yeah. Where you don't know what elements are really important to the mechanics. So yeah, that's funny.
Every time I'm in doubt, I directly ask for it. I say, is this the most important thing, or is this the most important thing? And they just look it up and tell me. But they won't tell you beforehand, because they don't want to give you too much.
Well, right. And they're constantly worried about cards getting leaked and information getting leaked. So
No, it's not that. It's more like sometimes it will limit your imagination if you're being told too much. So they would rather say,
it puts you in a box.
Yeah, yeah. And they would rather say, this is the information you need. We need you to use this as a springboard for your imagination. And that's why I love working for magic.
Right. Now, one interesting thing about your art is that it's always filled with what I like to call little, like, little trinkets, little small secrets in there. And when you're painting something, you're painting it for what ends up being a very small box in the card.
Yeah.
Does that change the way you approach the art at all? Or are you ever sad or disappointed that people might not see all the tiny details? For instance, there is someone jumping off the boat in Colossal Dreadmon, but if you don't look very carefully, you're going to miss it.
To be perfectly honest, Jimmy and Josh, I never painted this for a client or money. I painted for myself. So being able to sell it and make a living of it is a byproduct. So if I'm happy, I hope everyone else is. But I want to make cool art. I want to make cool pictures for myself. And usually that also ends up being a good product. So that's one thing. The other thing is that when I started in Lorwyn, I did a lot of details on the cards. And then it took a whole year before the card are being produced. So when the first card came out and I was looking at them, I was like, you can't see all the details I did. Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, I'm going to have to change somehow. And right after that, I started concentrating a lot about the silhouettes of the figures. So I always look for a very strong, very readable silhouette before I add any details. So the details is more the icing on the cake, if you know what I mean. And the silhouette and the readability is what I'm aiming at foremost.
Yeah, it's interesting. You have to change your style just knowing that the delivery system is eventually going to be a lot smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I had to change the style a lot for Magic, but it has also helped me in all other art that I'm doing in my career altogether, because having to figure out how to make the most clear narrative readable picture in a small frame, it's the same if you're doing a battle scene with 20 orcs, right? You still need to tell the narrative or the story the best, clearest way possible.
That's so cool. That's a great way of saying it. Now, of course, back in the day, you were doing color copies of acrylic paintings and sending those in. What is your favorite medium of painting now? Are you still someone that puts brush to a canvas, or are you moving to digital more? How has that evolved for you?
All my magic is original, except for a couple I did while I was traveling. So all of them are acrylic and brushes. But during my usual day, it's about 50-50 digital or 50% acrylic. It depends a lot of the job that I'm doing. But it changed a lot since I started doing illustrations and concept for computer games, because I thought, I'm doing something for a digital world. Why would I paint that with real paint? It's kind of stupid.
Right, right. Well, that's great to hear.
They're taking a lot of art, not just for magic, but for other things too, and sort of using it on multiple planes. So it'll be printed on something, but it'll also be used digitally for like a trailer, and they'll have to animate it.
Mm-hmm.
So do you find that the process changes a lot because of that? Are they asking you to sort of layer the image in some ways, or deliver it in that way, or they just take care of all that?
They took care of all that. I remember at some point I was asked by League of Legends if I wanted to do splash screens for them. And that was I was able to do digital work. That was when I was traditional. And they asked for the figure in one layer and effects on a different layer and the background on a separate layer so they could animate it. And I was answering them, yeah, it's going to be more or less one layer. So how do we do that? And they were like, what? You're not digital? And that was the first time I thought, maybe I should do something digital.
League of Legends, pretty big game.
Yeah, it is.
Well, before we move on to the next segment, I want to let everyone know that the Magic Man, Sam, who's also been on the show, did a really great profile piece of you on his channel. So if you guys are more interested in Jesper's art, make sure to check that out. We'll put the link below. It was a really informative piece.
Yeah. Sam's the best.
Sam's awesome, yeah.
It was like a distilled version of everything that I've concentrated on for 15 years in 8-minute video. I was tear breaking when I saw that.
Oh man, that's awesome to hear. I'm sure Sam would love to hear that as well, which is great.
Yeah.
He does really good work, so he obviously deserves the praise.
Exactly.
Okay, well, let's move on to talking about some of the cards that you've drawn, because a lot of them are straight up Commander staples.
One of them I would say is like, it's like top 10 most powerful cards in the format, maybe.
That must be the tooth and nail.
Yeah, it's tooth and nail.
Yeah, seriously.
That card's ridiculous.
I think one of you guys had it on your top 10 list in green, right?
I would be surprised if it wasn't on the top 10 list. It's just an instant win the game for
if you want it to be, that card wins the game.
Yeah,
you don't have to, but yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about Tooth and Nail specifically and the art on that? And
I didn't know what it was because when I got the description, it wasn't named Tooth and Nail. So it was just mm-hmm. like, do these two creatures. No, it was actually named Tooth and Nail. But I didn't thought it was that card. So I was just like, yeah, I did the description. And then afterwards, when it was printed, I was like, holy, this is a really, really good card. and I didn't yeah. own any of them, so they give you a sample. They give you artist proof of the cards,
right? APs.
So I was just putting them in all my green decks after that. Like, yeah,
yeah. I'd like to pause here really quick because I'm sure that's a question a lot of people will have at home, which is like, do you get the card? Artist proofs are a little bit different, but this is just a question that we get asked a lot in general. Can you explain how the artist proofs work?
Oh, yeah, they give you 30 copies of each card you do, but it doesn't have the ordinary backside of Magic with the brown side. It's just a white mm-hmm. back. So it's more like it's like a sample of your product, I guess. But it's also yeah. very collectible because there's only 30 of them, each card in the world. So there's a lot yeah. of collectors that really want those. But hey, I'm playing with mine.
I collect them like crazy.
You do?
Especially if it's Tooth and Nail.
I'm going to send you one each. No problem.
Oh, my goodness. That would make me very happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the art on this, too. It definitely follows, again, if you watch Sam's video about it, it very much follows what he sort of details as drawing your eye to the art here.
Yeah.
And those creatures are pretty terrifying. You have a particular affinity to making creatures in specific, I found.
Yeah, yeah. And I think mostly it's because, let's just say if you want to draw a very naturalistic human figure, all of us has a very reliable reference at hand. Mainly, mm-hmm. you know what a body looks like. But as soon as you start doing bullhorn demon creatures, it's like, yeah, you can't really see if I mess up in the legs or if the anatomy is a little bit screwed. So it's easier to get away with a lot more exaggerated features, and I really like that.
Yeah, and those features do definitely pop out, especially in your goblins. I'm a big goblin fan, so
every
time I see one of your goblins, I'm like, nice.
I like goblins,
too. Big surprise, Jimmy's a goblin fan.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the next card on the list here, which is... not as powerful as Tooth and Nail, but probably more prevalent in the Commander format.
Certainly.
This is a card that I put in almost every deck. You mentioned it earlier. It's Reliquary Tower.
Yeah.
This does not have some kind of enormous creature on it.
No. And I guess it's from the Lorwyn block, or that was from the set after Lorwyn. But it's mm-hmm. from the Lorwyn block, and I guess they were testing me out in different themes back then. And I was giving this land card. I did it, and I guess I got back to creatures after that. So it is one of my only land cards.
I mean, I do really like it though. I think the color contrast is mm-hmm. one of my favorite parts. Even on something like Tooth and Nail, the backgrounds always take this nice, beautiful wash of a certain color, and then it makes whatever you have in the foreground pop out that much more.
It's kind of that silhouette thing you were talking about, right?
Exactly, and it's also very contrasted colors. I always mm-hmm. go for very strong palette because I think it. I just really think we're doing fantasy here. We're not doing gray. I got enough of gray weather here in Denmark, so I need everything in fantasy to be popping like candy wrapped paper. I think that's really nice.
Well, that's actually interesting because it brings us to the next card, which is Arabo, Roar of the Wild. And this is a card that I love the art for because it actually doesn't follow what you were just talking about as much, which is popping out, because he almost seems like he really is a part of the color palette and the world.
Yeah, yeah. And that was
intentionally. You want to talk about the process behind that art? This looks like a very intense piece.
I remember us talking about this art before we had even spoken to you, Jesper, as something that was just pretty amazing. And the more you look at it, the more you're like, oh, he's sort of got like, he's almost made a cloak out of his mane. And it's, you know, there's a little bit of sort of camouflage aspect. Like it's very striking. Yeah, I'd love to hear you talk about it.
Yeah, I think I was so happy to get the assignment because that was specifically a commander. He said, okay, this is a commander. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, what does it do? They had to look up what it did for me, and I was super happy.
But, yeah, it's awesome.
I like, I what can I say? I mean, I did a lot of different takes on this. And
you did.
The worst part was that even after it was approved, I went back in and changed stuff because I thought I could do a better job. And in the end, I had changed a lot of it back to the what was the original approved the drawing or painting. And I think what I really wanted to do was having him express something, like roaring instead of just standing there. And also I wanted him to, like you said with the colors, I went a little bit off of what I'm usually doing because I wanted him to look like he was part of the environment because he's called the Roar of the World. So I wanted him to be a part of the world that he commands, right? So that's why I integrated him in the environment. So it looks like this is my realm, this is my landscape, these are my small cat creatures. And there's a lot to tackle in that piece. But I'm really happy with it.
It's so fascinating to hear you talk about all the little things you have to think about that sort of lead you down the path that eventually you find, you know, at the end, the right place to land. I just love that about the creative process about anything.
Yeah. And I'm also a very stupid artist. I'm one of those that I really need to see it on paper before I can decide. And sometimes that means that I do 20 or 30 different takes on the same painting in pencil. I fill huge piece of paper with thumbnails, and only when I see something, I see, oh, this is not working. Next. And then I just do that until I get a stomach feeling that says, this is it. This could be a great painting.
Right, gotta trust your gut. Now, I have a question: how big is the actual art piece for Arabo? I feel like it could be a big one.
No, 16 by 12 inches.
Oh wow, yeah,
so it's the size of the board that I'm using. So I don't think I would go bigger because then I will get carried away in too many details and I will lose the readability in the end.
I see. Yeah, makes sense. All right, now let's talk about one of your more gruesome arts. This is, I think, another major Commander staple. It's Beast Within, but now, there have been a few arts for this over the years. And I want to ask about that specifically. Whenever you're doing art for a piece that has already existed in a prior printing, but they want a new art version for it, do you ever go back and look at the other arts, or do you try and keep your mind as clear as possible moving into the project?
I mean, they never get into it. They never say it's a reprint or anything, but of course, when
it was Beast Within.
I knew the card, so I looked at it and I thought, okay, I'm going to have to do something completely different, right?
Right.
The worst part of doing this was when I did the Prognostic Sphinx, I think it was called. It was a remake of Stephen Prescott's painting, and I loved Prescott's painting. He even shared the pencil with me before he painted it, so I was completely in love with this painting. And then they asked me to do a retake, and I was, no, I can't possibly beat the one he did. So I immediately knew back then I needed to do something really different than his to not compete. But Beast Within?
Beast Within.
I don't know if you've seen the token that came with it.
The Beast token?
Yeah. Because the Beast token, they commissioned the both at the same time. The Beast Within has this guy with a creature coming out of his chest, right? So the token, I did the beast that came out. And he's sitting like smirking in the woods. But underneath him, and it is pretty difficult to see, but underneath him is actually the guy from the Beast Within card lying dead.
I did not know that.
He's almost like sitting on top of him like, I did this. So
that's amazing.
And I know a lot of people don't see that, but I just make up these small stories to make it all more fun for me.
That's great. Well, they're going to know it now.
Yeah.
Have Terry track down that specific Beast Token art.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it so happens you've done a couple of our preview cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, when I saw these, I actually gasped because I didn't realize it, but it's your art. I freaked out. I was like, oh my gosh, it's our card. Yeah.
So our very first ever preview card was Impact Resonance. You did that one.
Yeah.
And then one of our more recent ones, the one from this year's Commander set, Fortunate Few.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Was also yours.
That was a fun card. That was super fun.
That actually reminds me of almost sort of that Lorwyn vibe where you have all sorts of different things and creatures and craziness happening on the same card.
I love that one because you're like, again, you could tell by looking at this card that the person was a Magic player, because it's like, well, what did people chosen? Like, well, it was a goat. It was like all this like crappy stuff that was left over.
Yeah. And I, when I did it, I kind of had an old Gary Larson strip in my mind. There's one with a refugees in a boat drawing straw about who they should eat. And in the back of the boat, there's a dog looking indifferent at the guy who draw the shortest straw. And I thought, I'm going to make the goat the coolest person of all these. I'm going to make the goat he doesn't care about the destruction. He's more like that dog from Gary Larson, like, yeah, whatever.
Wow, that's amazing. That's fantastic.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I love that art, though. It's really great.
Thanks a lot.
Definitely you can see it. Like, of course there's a goat token that someone's going to choose to keep around.
So, yeah, I think, I mean, we obviously can't talk about every card you've ever drawn or you've ever done. There's been too many, but some other notables that we can show to people here. Thornbite Staff.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
That's a super powerful card.
I think it's one of my hardest illustrations ever.
Oh, really?
Because at that point, I never did any illustrations in my career that didn't have a figure or character.
Yeah, so that's no creature.
It was like a staff, and that was it. And I was placing him in the wood. I'm saying him. So I was placing it in the woods like a character, and I thought, there's gonna be something else about the staff. So I don't know if you noticed it, but the light changes when it goes through the hole of the staff.
It's like Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, but no, it's a yellow light from the sun. But as soon as it passes through the eye of the staff, it turned blue, and I thought that was really cool. Like it was a portal or something.
Yeah, yeah. I never realized that. And I play this because I have a Kiki Jiki deck, and this card is just absurd in that deck.
Yeah,
I always thought it was like illuminating like the spot somewhere farther down outside of the frame.
Yeah, but I mean, it the whole light change was just something I made up to show more magic, I guess. So
yeah.
It wasn't a part of the description. It was just something I made up because I thought it was cool, and I needed something else because I couldn't do a cool figure.
Wickerbolt Elder is another one you did, which has seen a lot of. It's gotten a lot of play on Game Nights
and
the podcast really recently.
Really nice card, right?
Is it fun when, like, a card, like, this is a card that nobody's talked about for years, and then all of a sudden, because of Apatra, it kind of got back into the limelight light?
Yeah.
Popular. It's almost like forcing people to discover your art, like, years later.
Yeah. There was Shadowmoor, I think it was. Sorry, I can't remember the name of the card, but there was an artifact creature. You could tap it and take an artifact creature from your graveyard, put directly into play. That card, when it came out, was just, nothing. And Commander wasn't that big then, but that one is in my artifact decks because it's an insane to be able to put a card directly into play.
Yeah, any card that does that. You know, I was thinking
cheap Goblin Mana Cost.
Yeah, Goblin Welder, mm-hmm. any of those.
Yeah.
Now, before we move on entirely, I did want to ask you, have painted one expedition
career. And that was crazy.
Was the process for that any different? Because obviously
none of the artists had any idea what expeditions was. When they commissioned it, it was like a year before. I was just, because I bugged one of the art directors constantly saying, yeah, I want to do basic lands, because... To be perfectly honest, I just want to be able to build a deck with all my own cards in it. And I need basic lands for that. I can't just go with four Reliquary Towers and four Forbidden Orchards, right? So I need a basic forest. Wizards, if you hear this. So
I mean, they should just give you one set of the five basic lands. Why not?
I think they're tired of having me approach this subject constantly. But I asked to do a land card, and he said, yeah, I got a land card now. Do you want to do it? Yeah, sure. And I had no idea what the expedition was like. But
did they even tell you that it was going to be for a special type of card?
Yeah, they said this is for a smaller special kind of set, and I was like, okay, cool. I didn't know what it was, so. Mm-hmm. But after the first expedition set, artists kind of found out what it was about.
Right, I'm sure they did.
Now, before we go on to talking to you about the player, you actually have built a commander deck around one of your commanders, and it's not Arabo. It's actually I don't think we've ever talked about this card on the show.
And it's
ever.
Weird because I think the Deathkeeper, I don't even know how to pronounce that.
Sekwar.
Deathkeeper. I thought it was this would be a perfect deck for Josh.
Why is that?
Because it has a lot of interactions with the different cards. It has a lot of synergy-based cards in it.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot of battle tricks. It can do a lot of different... Mm-hmm. You can build... I mean, the deck I build is creature heavy, of course. it's also very fun to play. It can shift gear a lot. It can do a lot of different stuff. And I really like that.
I'm going to read the card really quick here so we can talk about this deck a little bit. It's Sekwar, the Death Keeper. It costs 2 black, red, green. So 5 mana total for a 4/3 legendary orc shaman. It says, whenever another non-token creature you control dies, put a 3/1 black and red graveborn creature token with haste on the battlefield. So anytime one of your creatures dies, you get a 3/1 with haste.
Yeah.
And that's not, it doesn't like die at the end of turn. You just get that.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you can get into some crazy loops where you're sacking something over and over, you could make a ton of 3/1s and attack that turn with them. They all have haste. That seems really powerful. Also,
it needs to be a non-token creature. That's the catch.
Right. You can't cycle the tokens. No. Otherwise, it would just be crazy.
Yeah.
Seems like Shadowborn Apostles would work really good in this deck, actually.
Oh my gosh.
But I build it up around Nether Trader and Reassembling Skeleton and Bloodghast.
Oh yeah.
Cards that automatically gives me a way of recurring them, right? There's one trick in it that I really like. If you can imagine Sadistic Hypnotist in this deck.
Oh gosh.
Because as soon as you have one creature to sack, you get you discard and you get a new token. You can also sack that to Sadistic Hypnotist.
He's a hypnotist.
You can easily make people discard their whole hands, like the whole table.
I played this one in turns 5, Sadistic Hypnotist, and just removed the hands of all different free players.
Brutal.
Oh, so that, it is pretty... pretty neat.
I don't think they thought about it as being pretty neat, but you know, I love Sadistic Hypnotist, so I'm on board with that plan.
But there's one other card that I would just simple interaction with it. If you like Fleshback Marauder.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Fleshback,
it's just super nice because you sack himself and you get a 3/1 and everyone else needs to sack one and there we go.
Right, so usually Fleshback Marauder is, you know, you play it as an edict, one use sorcery effect, but this time you actually get something out of it at the end of it.
Exactly. You still get a 3/1, yeah.
Yeah, and you just keep recurring that effect, right? Bringing him back.
Yeah, the stuff
the
that sort of recurs itself, like Reassembling Skeleton,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's really smart, because you can probably get in these loops where, with Ashnod's Altars and stuff, where you're sacking it to create the mana to bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you get Grave Pact, Dictate of Erebos out... Ugh. Good night. Nobody else gets creatures but me.
Exactly.
Or cards, I guess, at this point.
That sounds fun.
There's a lot of super...
You know me well.
Yeah, exactly. I've been listening to everything you say.
You guys are monsters. It's funny because you actually have a Jund Tokens deck specifically, too.
Yeah.
Right?
There's one card I need to talk about also in this deck. It's Bloodspore Trinax.
Bloodspore Trinax,
It's a 2/2, and it has Devour 1. And each other creature I control enters the battlefield with an additional +1. Counter on it where X is the number of counters on him. So it functions so good in this deck because it devours, so I have a sack outlet. But also every Graveborn token becomes, just if I sack one creature, it becomes a 4/2 haste.
That's brutal, yeah.
Or if you devour two, I mean...
The haste is brutal because when you go off on the turn you go off, you just attack that turn.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
Because
yeah.
most token decks, you also need a haste enabler, right? Mm-hmm. So you need an additional sort of piece to the puzzle, but this one comes with it kind of...
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is.
I haven't actually played against this deck before. I don't know how, but...
Well, hey, Jesper says he's going to be in LA next year.
I'm
going to
be in LA next year. I'm going to bring this and I'm going to crush you.
You guys don't know, but before we start recording, he was telling us how he was like, I want to get into a game with you guys so that I can kill you.
Yeah, it wasn't like, let's play a friendly game. He's like, I'm going to destroy you.
I think I used the word humiliate.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, then it's a perfect transition. Let's talk about Jesper Eising, the artist, the myth, and the I'm guessing. Johnny Spike? I can't really tell. So let's start with the basics. Yeah.
No, I'm.
What is your play style?
Let me just. I'm not completely sure with those terms, but Timmy is the guy who wanna win spectacular, right?
Yeah, with big, not he actually wants, not
like,
even
big creatures or like a lot of creatures or like
dragons, huge things hitting you for 20 in the air.
Let's just say that over the years I've dissembled all my combo decks. I don't want to do the kind of games where you just win automatically and take endless turns and then I say, ah, win. I think, every one of us has done that a lot of times, but I would rather win big and spectacular. And doesn't need to be like a huge creature. It can also be a cool interaction between cards that lock people down and have them whining
discard
that they
all
can't
their
do
hands.
Stuff like that. Or I have a how do you pronounce that? Imperial Tacticon stacks deck where I just slowly grind people to a halt. and that's so much fun for me.
So you're a mix then, a little bit of a Spike. The Johnny combo aspect is still there.
Yeah,
but
I think so.
Not at sort of win at all costs. That's interesting. I really like that. It's good. You're like a seasoned player, clearly.
Yeah, I'd never want to win at all costs. I mean, I think I definitely want to win through a spectacular style that no one has ever seen, like interaction between cards that no one saw coming, stuff like that.
You and Josh are actually closer in player type than I think I realized.
I am Josh, pretty sure, Josh.
Music to my ears.
Yeah.
I can also see in the command zone that, Josh, you get kind of carried away when you got your sampling. When you got your pieces assembled, you're like, yeah, now I can do my thing. And I'm like,
you get
excited. I can see
my
that.
Eyes start getting bigger. I'm like, I'm doing this. Oh, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do this.
I know exactly what you mean.
That's great. So Jesper, when you're playing, what really matters to you then for Commander? Do you like the politics of the game? Obviously you said winning at all costs is not the main priority. So, do you like to, you know, are you someone that is very political, someone that always is making promises or deals, or are you more of a straightforward player?
I love that question because I have a tendency to be one of the players that I play my hand to the maximum potential, like the maximum power I can get out of all the cards I have, which also makes me a threat to everyone. And everyone around the table are like, Jesper is going off now. We got to stop him. And I never cared about politics. And you guys saved me from that because I listened to your podcast about politics. And the game night I had after that, I thought, okay, let me just use all the advice you guys had. And I won three games in a row.
Wow!
So now I'm changing my style a little bit to be less aggressive, and playing more political game, and then exploding like a madman when I can.
I like everything I'm hearing right
now. I think that too.
You guys made me play in a different way over the last couple of months, and I really I appreciate that, guys.
That's awesome.
Well, that's great to hear. Jesper, do you have any like no stuff, you know, in Commander? I know a lot of people like they don't like Infect or Mass Land Destruction or Counterspells. Is there anything in the game that's like kind of off limits to you?
Yeah, Endless Turns. Endless Turn or automatically wins, I kind of dislike because they ruin what I think is fun about Magic. They kind of ruin the interaction between players. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have them, but we have one guy in the playgroup that likes to take a lot of turns, and I think that's cool, but I know he's doing it, so I kind of shape decks around being able to handle that.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
So, I think that's really smart, and I think we hear from a lot of people who they complain about a certain thing they don't like, and it's like, okay, but are you building your decks then to stop that thing? Because that's kind of what gaming's about in a lot of ways, is this sort of like, you know, thrust and parry. You know, to use a fencing analogy, but it's about countering what you know they're going to do. That's why it's called a strategy game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but as soon as somebody is playing a target player takes an extra turn and you use a misdirect to you taking an extra turn, they kind of don't play that deck again, right?
It just hurts. It hurts.
Yeah,
so
it hurts
badly,
way
like, oh,
worse
no.
than, yeah.
That's awesome.
So what do you think your most controversial features are then? For instance, if your friend is the person taking a lot of turns, is there something that someone looks to you and goes, oh, Jesper's doing this again? Is it the dump your whole hand out in one explosive turn moment?
Yeah, stuff like that, or just doing a lot in my turn, like a lot of triggered effects or a lot of in a card synergy. I think what I found out was that I liked playing decks that did not necessarily evolve around having one combo, but more having synergy between cards, like Karmic Guide or Revelark, those kind of synergies. And as soon as I started building decks around the synergy themes, I thought the decks were more resilient or were more fun to play in the long game, right? So, and I guess that also, that's the way I play, like with a lot of different synergy effects in my turn. Or also, I really like to do battle tricks, like out of nowhere, like blocking situation where you just get that little extra out of it that no one expected, and you just go out the bigger player, right?
Wow. Are we talking like giant growth?
Yeah, that's the simple way, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, what are you, when you say battle tricks, what do you mean? Like, what's a card example? I'm just curious.
For me, it's more like you do a lot of stuff, and then he blocks, and he kind of, he uses giant growth, and then you lightning bolt the creature with the giant growth and kind of ruins all the blocking situation for him, something like that.
That's the, right, so speed, yeah, like, very reactive then.
Reactive. I always have mana open.
Sort of stopping their plans.
Yeah. Yeah, but it also, you need to have decks that have these instant interactions, right?
So yes,
a lot of the decks that are just creatures, that's why I don't like playing only, let's say, white-green. White-green is a lot of linear play. Like actually, like the Arabo deck, it's a very linear deck. How do you pronounce that? Linear deck
linear.
Of play?
Linear, yeah.
Where I like the more instant interactions.
Yeah, you like to have something up your sleeve.
Exactly.
Yeah. I can relate.
Yeah. Talking to Josh all over again.
Can relate.
Gosh. Otherwise, you feel helpless.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's never a good feeling.
That's why you play Anguished Unmaking and Utter End in every single deck you can.
Yeah. All right. Well, now, before we finish, Jesper, we did this with the professor, and I thought that was a really fun thing to do, but we have player archetypes. And we've sort of gotten a sense of who you might be, but there's something like, you know, the mentor, the rebel, the judo master, the opportunist, and the lone wolf.
There's also the architect.
The architect, right.
There was somebody else on Twitter had a really good one. I forget.
There's the merciless.
Master. The merciless, right. Yeah.
The merciless.
Group hugger.
Yeah. What do you think your like archetype would be?
I have decks in almost all categories. I think.
But when are you at your most happy?
I'm playing blue in a lot of decks. So I think blue, white, green is my favorite combinations.
Blue, green,
especially. Bant is my favorite. So I guess I'm a judo master. Isn't that?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because that's the one that's sort of redirecting energy and, like, you know, having tricks up their sleeves. And
I have an Ephara, God of the Police, Blink deck, and that has all the instant interactions that I really love to play.
Yeah, well, that play you said where somebody casts an extra turn spell on themselves and you misdirected yourself, that's 100% a judo master play.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Can I tell you about the best magic experience I ever had?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry I can't remember the card, but it's one of the Aether Revolt cards where you sacrifice 50 life to shoot 50 damage.
Yeah, Aetherflux Reservoir.
Yes. Yeah. So my friend was playing this in a life gain deck, and he just looked at me and like, I'm going to shoot him because Jesper is always nasty and does tricks. So I was like looking innocent. I was like, don't. And he was like, yeah, I'm gonna sack 50 life. And he went down to 4 life and shot me. And I was playing my Faro deck, so I played a Void Mage Husher.
And it's
a 2/2 flash, and it makes me counter an activated ability. He still had to sack 50 life. and I didn't get any damage. And in my turn, I just killed him with the last 4
hits. Wow.
He just took 50 damage to do nothing.
I remember the shock on his face when he was just like, Void Mage Husher, let me read that card. And I was like, sure, you can read it. You just sacked 50 life. Thanks.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I think that's my best
play
ever.
That's fantastic. I think that's the kind of moment that I personally dream for every time I play a card like that, or you know, like a misdirect in my deck is like just one time.
Yeah,
just one time. Let me get them.
Come on, man. That's the dream. Void Mage Husher. I played a lot of Void Mage Husher in my day. I've never been able to deal 50 damage with it.
No, yeah, exactly.
Every once in a while, I'm like, I guess I'll just screw you over with your fetch land. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
but that's really, that's almost meaner, honestly. I'd rather lose 50 life than not be able to fetch.
Before we wrap up here, I have to address something because you posted a picture on Twitter, or sorry, I think it was Facebook,
yeah,
actually.
Facebook or Twitter, yeah.
A couple weeks ago, and it was a picture of all of your commander decks.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was horrifying, even to me, because you had rubber bands around all of them.
No deck boxes.
We got to track down that picture, Terry. Let's put it up on screen. Yeah, there was no deck boxes. It wasn't like two decks. It was like, I don't know.
It was your entire collection,
like 18,
I think.
20 decks.
I think there was 20 decks, yeah.
It literally made my stomach hurt.
What's the rationale? I need to know. Why? Why would you do this to us?
Yeah, but I don't think I have like two deck boxes or something like that. They're all just lying here in my home, and it's only reason I started doing the sleeves at all. I usually played with them just sleeveless with dual lands and stuff like that. And people were freaking out when you're
the
like,
professor is freaking out right now.
When you did the poker shuffle and the top card was a dual land, people were like, "You can't do that." but then I did some illustrations for a competitor of your sponsor, mm-hmm. Arcane Tinman, the Dragon Sleeves. Uh-huh. So I did some illustrations for them, and they started sending me a lot of sleeves. So now they're all protected. But yeah,
there you go. Well, it turns out all you had to do was just provide you some sleeves. Next up, we'll send you some deck boxes, and we'll.
I'll trade you some deck boxes for some artist proofs, right?
I will take that in a heartbeat.
Thanks.
We will definitely send you some Ultra Pro deck boxes. We have a lot, and fantastic. You need them badly.
Yes. it is pretty stylish, though, and I love seeing how many people commented on that picture yesterday. So many people were like, what is happening?
There's a lot of people saying, I want to send you some deck boxes.
Yeah, no, seriously. I mean, that was a great way to have a charity fundraiser for deck boxes, so good on you.
I had mad respect for it. I used to keep rubber bands around all my decks, but
yeah.
But I look back on that, and I regret it.
Did you ever ruin a card with it? Did you ever have a card?
That can't possibly be true.
I never
not ruined, just scuffed.
I never had anything ruined by it. Come on.
Yeah, you can still play the card, right?
I'm not trading much anyway, so.
Yes, true.
Well, if you want to find that picture, if you're listening to the audio and you didn't see it on the video, or other things that Jesper's posted or where he talks about his art and everything, you can go to muddycolors.blogspot.uk, and that is, that's your blog.
Yeah, that's where you break down the Colossal Dreadmaw art show the different versions that you did. Is there anywhere else that we can find you online? I know that you don't use Twitter. I tried to find you last night.
Yeah, I'm hopelessly behind on that. No, Muddy Colors is by far the best place because that's a very huge site of fantasy art. So.
Yeah, lots of different artists there post. And you post a couple once every 2 weeks, I believe?
Yeah. And we've done
so make sure you guys check that out.
As long as you've been doing this podcast, so it's a long time coming.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Wow. Great way to look into the artist's perspective and learn a little more, especially for aspiring artists out there, a great resource, and just anyone that's curious about the process.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move on very quickly to the listeners. If you have any wild stories with Jesper's cards, and we'll have a list of them as well below the video so that you can take a look and see if you have any limited stories or EDH stories, let us know. Send us a tweet or leave a comment on Jesper's blog. And I would also love to know, you know, if you all have any favorite personal Magic artists as well, and what matters to you when you pick up a card and look at it. I know a lot of players out there never even really bother to look at the art. For me, I look at the art and I always get a vague sense of what it is, but I sometimes forget to pay attention to the small details, but that's something I'm definitely going to be changing now that we've interviewed you, Jesper.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
And if you find any cards with cool art that you would like to pick up,
ooh,
all you have to do is go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. If you use that affiliate link when you buy your Magic cards, you're supporting this podcast, Game Nights, all of our content, and we really do appreciate it.
And in a different way, you're also supporting Jesper if you show someone and go, look at this card and look at the art specifically. It's beautiful. Our other sponsor for the show, Ultra Pro. You can also, of course, get deck boxes there. They deck don't boxes. Sell, they don't sell rubber bands.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
But
well, yeah.
They'll even send them to Denmark. Pretty sure.
Yeah. Pretty sure they stock around the world. So thank you to Ultra Pro for being a great sponsor of the show.
They don't sell rubber bands, though, because yeah. You shouldn't use those as deck boxes.
Nope.
All right. Now it's time for the end step where we talk about something cool outside the world of magic. Jesper, do you have anything cool outside the world of magic that you're doing right now? Maybe a book you're reading, a movie you saw, anything?
There's nothing happening outside of magic. What do you mean?
That's the right answer. That's the show, everybody.
It certainly feels like that sometimes.
Yeah.
I know you guys read a lot of books, and I read a lot of fantasy books also. And I don't know if you've read Joe Abercrombie.
Yes, I have read some Abercrombie.
He's a British, yeah, he is my favorite author for the moment, and I know that he's writing a free issue. What do you call that? Like free books?
Free series or cycle?
Yeah. And they're gonna be out very soon, I hope. He's my favorite author, and if you haven't read The Blade Itself, Last Argument,
yeah, The Blade It's
Kings and that series, I think you should definitely give it a try. I like that he kind of did something more gritty and nasty in fantasy that I was used to at that point, and I really like that. It's not that much about creatures and dragons or anything. It's just about really mean people.
Yeah, I think it's definitely similar to Game of Thrones. I think people that like Game of Thrones will like The Blade Itself and
sure.
And that series. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Great one. Yeah, right up Josh's alley again. Jeez, you guys are like long-lost twins over here.
Like my brother from another mother.
That's
seriously,
right.
Seriously, yeah. Seriously.
Two of our other brothers from other mothers, Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman, they do a podcast called Masters of Modern. It's about the modern format, all things competitive magic. You should definitely check them out. You can find them right next to us at collected.company or on Twitter at the MMcast.
And our editor for the show, Terry Robertson. Thank you, Terry, for taking this audio, Jesper's audio as well, and putting it all together on a video and audio version of the podcast. You can check that out, youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast. And of course, Jeffrey Palmer does a little living cards animation. Actually, maybe we should get Jeffrey to animate one of your cards because they are full of dynamics. So we'll let you know if that ever happens, Jesper. But Jesper, thank you so much for being on the show, man. It's great to finally connect. And your art has made a huge impact on everyone's magic career. So we thank you for that.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm a huge fan of your show. So thanks a lot.
Well, that's great. We're a big fan of you. In fact, yeah, we're going to have to coordinate with you somehow and get one of your arts animated for our the windows behind us on our podcast now. I also want to call out Balam Nahara, who did this one, which is the Ravnica Dome. So thanks to Balam. Jesper,
yep.
Hopefully we'll catch up with you in LA soon, and yep. Hopefully we will avoid getting absolutely humiliated.
I will start building a deck right now.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much again, Jesper, for being on the show. Make sure you guys, again, go to muddycolors.blogspot.uk to check out his work and his writing. And I guess that wraps it up. Until next time, we'll see you later.
Peace.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.